Yeah.
Can I close this? Can I open it?
Oh, it's on the ground. I guess it fell off.
Oh, boy. It's like, are we going to get stuck in here?
No, that we're having some challenges today, I guess.
Oh, no. What's that?
That's the doorknob. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I just want to make sure that if I close this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
it should be okay.
Screw just popped off, I see.
Okay. Got to get the handyman here. Welcome back, everyone, to our favorite part of the week. It's time to listen to Sounds of Health, where we share the stories, people, and resources that help others to improve their physical, emotional, and financial well-being. Whether you consider yourself a health enthusiast, or maybe a wellness warrior, or you're simply looking for information, guidance, or inspiration, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Dave McNiven, and today I am really excited to welcome our guest, Leanne D'Angelo of Leanne D'Angelo Coaching. Leanne's mission is simple yet profound: to empower her clients to embrace lives of greater ease, purpose, and joy. Leanne is also a seasoned fitness instructor and a devoted meditator, and I'm excited to have you here to talk about all of this. Welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, David.
Thank you. I want to get into kind of all of the things that you provide and do in your business. But before we do that, I would love to just hear your story and, you know, what brought you to the path that you're on today.
Sure. Thank you. Well, I have over 30 years of experience in healthcare and in a wide variety of settings. But what really brought me to the path of becoming a well-being coach was when my children were teenagers. So back in 2016, my husband and I had filed for divorce. And it was an amicable divorce, but still challenging on my children.
Of course.
In the midst of that process, he became very ill and was in and out of hospitals and nursing homes for about a year, and then passed away unexpectedly.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
At the time, my children were 12 and 15. So I, being a widow, a full-time worker, a mom, person with a mortgage, a yard, so on and so forth. I mean, I was just trying to keep all the balls in the air.
Overwhelming, make sure, to say the least.
Make sure nobody missed a practice or a meal. The laundry was done, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And help them navigate while I, of course, was also trying to navigate this new situation. So we did go to some family counseling for a little over a year. And while it did offer some pearls of assistance, if you will, nothing really stuck. Nothing really helped us get through and gave us the ability to maintain a calm household.
Yeah.
Right. It was bad, Dave. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, there was yelling. I mean, all of us now that we're older, you know, here we are 7 years later, we've been able to talk about it, which is really beautiful, and laugh about it a little bit and think about, wow, that was just really crazy what we all went through. But during that process, when we felt like the family therapy wasn't really supporting us, I was seeking something else. So a friend of mine had suggested I join a group called the Rewilders. This is a rewilding community that bases its philosophy and teaching on the three principles of Sydney Banks and a man by the name of Dr. William Pettit of Illinois, not to be confused with the Dr. Bill Pettit of Cheshire, who is a clinical psychiatrist. I had heard him speak on the three principles and how it changed his way of approaching his clients and his psychology, and that there was just a much simpler way. No tools, no techniques, just simple, deep listening and grounding. And I thought, that just sounds a little too simple to be effective, but What do I have to lose?
Yeah.
I really had nothing to lose at that point. So I joined the community and 6 months in was invited to go through their Rewilding Guide training program, which was a 6-month intensive program, multiple weekends, many hours, coaching, guiding, being coached, being guided. And it just changed our lives.
Oh, wow.
It changed our lives so profoundly that one day my older daughter got up and she said, "What happened to you?" I go, "What do you mean, what happened to you? What, like what I do?" like, what happened to you? You stopped yelling. You're here. Who are you? It was one of those really profound moments. And I just said, well, I've been going through this training program and I'm really taking a look at all that you're going through, all that I'm going through. I go, and I just see it different, because when you're in the heat of it, whatever that it is,
right,
trauma, grief, divorce, anger, anxiety, sadness. I mean, I can go on and on.
Yeah.
When you're in the heat of it, you can't see it.
No.
You know, you're just trying to get through on a day-to-day basis as best you can. And there were a lot of nights when I got through the day, you know, I was kind of like, oh, I could have done that better. Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? Because all those tools and techniques that the other counseling had provided didn't work when I was in the heat of it.
Right.
So the idea of the pause, you know, there's basically a millisecond between having a thought and having a feeling. And it happens to us all the time, right? You hear a song that makes you happy and you feel joyful. You see an old friend on the street and it makes you happy.
Yeah.
And that millisecond is really the important pause to say, hey, what's going on here? Where am I? Where is the person, child in my case, that I'm interacting with? Where are they?
Yeah.
I didn't see, while it seems so clear now, I didn't see all of their grief and anger as grief and anger, which is what it was. It felt all very personal.
Of course.
You know, whereas I was thinking, oh my God, do they not know what I've just been through? Why are they being such little, I don't get it. And they couldn't get it. They're young.
Of course.
Yeah. So
at that age, 12 and 15.
12 and 15.
Yeah.
And now at the ages of 19 and 22, you know, our relationship just couldn't be better, because I'm able to listen for the feeling. I don't listen for their words anymore.
Yeah.
I listen for what's really going on here. Why are you upset, or why are you saying these things? And generally when you take that pause, you can get down to what the real concern is, or what someone really wants to say.
That's amazing. A few of the things that you just said kind of resonated with me. One, you know, trying that that traditional path of being in therapy with your children. I'm curious how open they were to that. Like, did they have any concerns, or did you guys go into therapy and they were completely ready to go?
I'll say in the beginning, they went together without me. And as they tell me now, they're like, yeah, that was like the worst hour of our lives.
Really?
And, you know, never, ever again. Over time, it was just me and one of my daughters went. The other one was like, you know, I'm good. I'm processing it. And outwardly, she seemed to be, you know, because she was still doing well in school and still participating in activities, whereas the other daughter was not. So when we went in, she was all in. She was all in, and when we were in it together.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that towards, you know, after about 9 months, I noticed that generally I would walk out feeling not so good.
Yeah.
Like I had done something wrong. My response was wrong. I was told I was supposed to say this when she does that, or you should have done this. Why didn't you? And I'm like, okay, well, had I thought of that, I would have done that in the moment.
Right.
So about the third time when I left a session, not feeling really good, and I'm kind of being kind with my words here.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't do this anymore. We have to find a better way.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I still want to go. And I said, I completely support that. If you need another outlet, right? Because I do believe that teens and children in general, they need people besides their parents. They need another trusted adult, an aunt, an uncle, a neighbor, a teacher, whomever. And I completely support that.
So her experience was different, and she was getting value out of those sessions.
Very much so.
Okay.
And dare I say, at the time, she almost felt like it was validating for her. Look at what my mom did.
Right.
You know, look at what she said, and she should have done this better. And I was like, okay, you know, if you want to see it that way, that's fine.
Yeah.
But hold on 1 second. Can you just acknowledge, which she does now, that I'm just a mom doing the best I can with what I had at that moment.
That's hard for a kid. It's not something any of us really have a perspective on when we're growing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we don't see our parents as people. They're our parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's very difficult. The other thing that you said too is just when you're in something, right, being able to see your way out of it or seeing that perspective. I have a passage in my head. I always go back to a lot. I don't even know where it's from, to be honest with you. I should probably look it up. But it's our moods do not believe in each other. So when you're in that low place, you can never imagine that there's a way out and that you're going to see the light again. And vice versa, when you are on a high and living life and feeling good, you can't imagine those lows, those things that are really going to tear you down. So it's something that I think all of us need help with, is finding that path and finding that balance as well, so that we're not always high and low.
There's a great quote that speaks to this by Sydney Banks, and I do want to read it so I get it right.
Yeah.
If the only thing people learned was not to be afraid of their experience, that alone would change the world.
That's great.
That alone would change the world. Because, like you just said, Dave, when you're in the low, it's hard to remember that you're not always going to be there. And that's, you know, we won't get into the, I mean, that's part of depression. We won't get into all the clinical side, or we can, but when people go that low and they stay there that long, it is hard to see their way out of it. It's completely normal and natural. However, with this type of understanding, to just sit with it. Mm-hmm. And some teachers will actually encourage people to invite it for tea. You know, anxiety, there you are today. I'm going to give you a name. I'm going to call you Annie Anxiety.
Right.
Let's come down and have a cup of tea together. Talk to me. Why are you here? What are you doing for me? You know, it sounds kind of silly, but it's a really neat exercise to play with that emotion.
Well, I think it removes your feelings from who you are. You know, it takes the identity away. So you're not just what you're feeling.
Correct.
You know, so you can acknowledge it and then have a conversation and move on.
Yes. And to acknowledge that all beings are, we are whatever we are at that moment.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're really complex human beings. Yet at the same time, if we can simply stay grounded and know that everything we have, Dave, is already inside of us.
Yeah.
I believe there is innate wisdom in everyone. And when I say everyone, I do mean everyone. Those who have been diagnosed with mental illness, those who have done horrible things, those who are our leaders, there is an innate wisdom in all of us. The challenge becomes remembering that and being reminded and getting still so that you can get back to that place where you're really your true self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now this, I don't even know what to call it, but what you learned when you joined the Rewilders community of listening for the feeling. So is that simply not reacting and trying to understand the feeling behind what's being said or the way it's being said? Can you talk to me a little bit more about what that is?
Sure, sure. We refer to it as deep listening, which is very different than active listening. I think many of us, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, we were all about learning about active listening and you know, reiterating back what someone said to you. The idea of deep listening is to listen for this pure essence and activity of listening with an open heart, with an open mind to what someone is saying. Not to be thinking of a response, not to have any responsibility to say anything or do anything back. And when this exercise is done over time, two beautiful things happen to these to two beautiful people in that exercise.
Yeah.
Not only the person who is speaking feels really heard and really understood in a way maybe they've never been heard or understood before, but the person who is listening, because that is their only responsibility to hold a sacred space for someone and not have to do anything with it, that helps that person process it. And the listener also gains this deep understanding of, wow, I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah.
And it's really powerful.
I think that that's amazing. I think there are, there's all types of people, right? And I think there's a social kind of pressure on all of us to be in conversations, to be a part of it. So a lot of times when you are speaking to somebody, they're thinking about what they're going to say next, as opposed to actually listening to what you're saying. And also, you know, I know I used to be guilty of this in the past, is listening to a friend with a problem. Like, my initial response is, I want to solve it. Oh, I got it. I have an idea that's going to cure that. But that's not really what they're looking for. You know, they're looking for, like you said, maybe they're just trying to process it for themselves. So they don't really need even a response from you. They just need you to listen and take it in and maybe, you know, have a conversation about it, but not be thinking about, how can I solve this for you?
Sure. And again, that goes for, you know, working with children and parents. So one of the questions I will ask one of my children, if they call in a state, okay, I will listen. And then when there's the pause, I'll say, do you want a hand? Do you want a hug? Or do you want help? So do you just need me to listen? Do you want some advice, or do you just want me to hold space for you and give you a hug?
I love that. That's great.
And from there, then we can have a conversation. I can't tell you how many times one of my teens has called me and, you know, something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Or a multitude of things has gone wrong. You know, it's never just one thing.
Of course.
The car broke down. my test, I didn't get my test in time, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And then they let it go and they're like, nope, I just needed to vent. I just need you to hear me. Okay, great. Have a good day. Talk to you later.
Yeah, hang up the phone. That's probably a really good practice when it comes to teenagers, especially. I know with my two, that they will voice frustrations or challenges that they're having. They never, for the most part, want me to solve it for them. Right. They don't want me to get involved.
Yeah.
You know?
And what service are you doing for them if you do?
Right. That's true.
It sends a lot of messages. One, just by listening, that you're a safe space. Okay, that you can hear them.
Yeah.
And by always offering the advice without asking if that's what they're looking for or feedback, subconsciously it kind of tells them that, oh, so I need help solving all my problems. It takes away their ability to sit and be, wait a minute, I can figure this out.
Yeah.
I know what my next right move is, or I know what the right response is. And maybe they don't, but by just jumping into offering them a solution, it kind of sends a message.
Yeah.
You're too young. You can't figure this out. And that's not true.
No,
that's
not at all. Yeah, I agree with you. So, okay. So let's get back to that path that you were on.
Sure.
So you found this program, you went through the coaching. What happened from there?
From there, we were required to do over 50 hours of coaching.
And this was for you to become a certified coach, or was this for just your personal journey and betterment?
Well, to be honest, it did start out just for my own personal betterment. Absolutely. Never, ever did I think, okay, I want to do this until the very end. And until I saw the changes in my own life, did I say, I cannot sit on the sidelines. I need to share this because it profoundly changed not only my life, but my family's life.
Yeah.
And how we live and communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. So, I started coaching, and this, of course, is during, I think it was around 2021. So, you know, the world was a different place then.
Yeah, of course.
We're doing a lot of things online, which was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I was sharing with Jason earlier that, you know, I had the opportunity to do coaching all around the world. I've spoken with parents from New Zealand, from England, Norway. I had a woman in California. I had a woman in Canada. I spoke with a woman in Florida.
That's amazing.
And what's really beautiful about it is, you know, we think we have all these problems, you know, you could generalize and say in the United States, or you could say the East Coast. That's not true. The things that I'm struggling with my teenagers is the same as the woman in New Zealand, and the same things I was worried and have anxiety about, same as the woman in England.
Wow.
So the grass isn't greener.
Yeah.
So that's what really prompted me to start sharing what I would like to do and how I would like to be of service, not only to my community, but to the world as a greater good in the coaching world. Because I think it is just so profoundly changing.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So did you immediately jump into a business? Like, did you start a business out of that?
Not right away. Originally, I was just talking with various groups, PTAs, PTOs, offering programs. And then I just started offering what I'll call one-off programs. Yeah. So last November, I offered a program called Navigating the Holidays. we all know the holidays can bring a special kind of twist to your angst and anxiety.
Absolutely.
It's a great setup for a lot of that. And a friend of mine also, we ran a program called Parenting from the Heart, which is based on one of my teacher's books, Jack Pransky, by the same name, Parenting from the Heart. And we offered an online program for parents. It was a 4-week program, very similar to one that I'm offering now. And we just, you know, little by little got the word out, not only through our community, but beyond. So even though there were people in the 3P community that wanted to dig deeper and learn more, we of course want to introduce the three principles to people who are, you know, again, not familiar with it and want to learn and just are looking for a simpler way to live a life of ease.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, were you full-time employed while this was happening, or like, how did that transition happen for you?
Oh, sure. Sure. So, I'd worked in healthcare, administration, management, and then, of course, consulting. I had my own consulting business for a while. And then I worked for a small boutique firm that was bought out by a large accounting firm.
Okay.
So I was only working for them part-time, again, because it was around the time when my husband passed. And after that, it was really just too hard to go back full-time and do all the things I wanted to do and be there for my children.
I'm sure.
So I was working part-time. And actually, just a year ago in April, decided to leave that full time and focus on my coaching full time.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. So
that's fantastic.
I can't believe it's been a year.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, time really does fly.
It definitely does.
And, it was wonderful work. I really enjoyed what I was doing because I felt like I was helping people in the medical community. I always felt like if I could take care of the administrative, the revenue cycle, the insurance, the financial stuff, I can let the providers do what they need to do.
Right.
Which is care for patients, hands-on. So I feel like this is a different type of service now. I can be hands-on and work with individuals, parents, one-on-one.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you're in another side of the business.
In another side of the business.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. And so what did you create? Like, what are you offering for people and how do they find you?
Sure. So I do have a website. It's a landing page, leandangelo.com. Didn't get super, you know, crazy with different
right.
names. And
it works.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah.
So I do post every day on Facebook. I want to post a little, you know, just a little tidbit. And this month I am offering a course called Unlocking Life's Simplicity. And this is also based on a book by Mavis Karn called It's That Simple, A Manual for Being a Human Being. And I based it on her book because her book is really simple. And I highly recommend it, even if you're not interested in the course. It's an easy read. She wrote the book in the form of letters to her, I guess I'll call them students. Basically, she worked in a juvenile detention area for two years. And basically, through deep listening, through asking them to share their thoughts about themselves and questioning those thoughts and the stories they'd been telling themselves about the quote-unquote bad people that they were, being in a juvenile detention center, you can imagine,
right.
How that wasn't really the full story. And how, if you look at, again, your innate wisdom and can get quiet, you're not the things you did to get yourself into this situation.
Sure, yeah.
So she wrote these letters to them because she was leaving. The program was ending. The funding had run out. And she said, what can I give them? What, you know, I'm not going to give them socks, right?
Right?
They don't need socks. They don't need I can't give them a gift card. They can't use it. So she wrote these letters to really display how our thoughts can trip us up. And how we can get stuck in these stories. So the course starts on May 15th. You can find the link to register on my website, Again, it's called Unlocking Life Simplicity. We'll meet for four consecutive Wednesdays over Zoom. I really debated on whether or not to do it in person or via Zoom.
Yeah.
I am doing the same class in person at my local YMCA. I'm also a fitness instructor and well-being coach at the Southington Cheshire Community YMCA.
That's great.
So that course is going to be running on Tuesdays, and that one will be in person. And you do not have to be a member to sign up for the class. So, and you can register for that by calling the front desk at the Southington Y.
That's great. That's good to know. Yeah. That's a great YMCA too.
Yeah, it's really, they offer so much, especially post-pandemic. They really have transitioned a lot of their programs. They've really beefed up their yoga offerings. There are some wonderful instructors there who talk about end of life type of difficult conversations. Yeah. Two people, Shelley Nygren and Crystal Sullivan, who run these groups on a weekly or a monthly basis to have the difficult conversations.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I should probably talk to them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to connect you.
Great. I appreciate that. And so you're also a fitness instructor there. Is that right?
I am. Okay. I am. So I'm a cycling instructor, and I also teach, it's called Resist, but it's more of a weightlifting, full body workout and core class.
That's great.
Right. I'm a long distance cyclist and ex triathlete. Although I don't know if I can say I'm an ex triathlete because I actually did a triathlon last year. So I guess as long as you do one a year,
I would think so.
You're still a triathlete, right?
You should, in my opinion, it should last for life if you've done one. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Have you done a lot of cycling events?
I have. I always ride in the Yale closer to free ride.
Yeah, great ride. Yeah.
Minimum of 40, usually 65.
Nice.
Miles, which is actually 68. The course is marked incorrectly.
Okay.
If you look at your odometer, you're like, oh, three more miles. Yes.
Yeah.
That and then just any other ride that I can jump
That's great.
Into.
I'm not a cyclist myself, but I used to run cycling events for the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp.
Oh,
I was a part of the team that did that. So we had our Angel Ride and we had the Camp Challenge Ride while I was there. Those were amazing events. There's so much work that goes into them behind the scenes. But that's great. Cycling is such a great sport. It's such a great way to stay active and fit.
It is.
Yeah.
And one of the things I am hoping to run at the Y, I used to also run the outdoor cycling club. It got a little challenging because you have different levels of cyclists, but cycling is definitely, I think people feel more comfortable as they should when they're in a group. The roads can be a little dangerous.
They can
these
be,
days.
Yeah, for sure.
Cars are bigger. People are distracted. People are impatient. Yeah. So when you go in a group and there's a whole bunch of them, I think you're just seen. It's easier to be seen.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
I will on occasion, once a month, run sometimes an outdoor cycling. Hey, if you want to meet up, you got to know that we're going to be going about 14 miles per hour and we're going to go off road. Some people like to stay on the trail, but I think it's more fun to explore and, you know, you can see so much on a bike that you can't
Absolutely.
See from a car,
right?
You know, so it's really fun. And there's beautiful, beautiful routes here in Connecticut.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So many parts of Connecticut that are great. During COVID, we got on our bikes, my kids and I, and my wife, and we have the canal trail right near us.
Oh, nice.
You know, and that just spans such a long distance. So we used to get on the bikes and just ride.
Yes.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yep. And great for the kids too.
For
like
sure.
To see that, wow, there's so much I can see and how far I can get.
Yeah.
There was a time when my kids didn't have their driver's license that, you know, their bike was everything.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
I know
when
I was growing up, I grew up in a real quiet neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, we were on our bikes
all
eight
the time.
In the morning till 8 at night.
Same
you know,
for me.
It, it was your vehicle.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So. I got all around town on my bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Now you also meditate. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, what's interesting is I've been actively training in meditation probably for about 7 years, 7 or 8 years, and didn't realize until I started training in meditation that I had been meditating without calling it meditation.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, feels a little raw to share this, but I will.
Yeah.
When my husband was ill, and I was, you know, a single mom and, you know, he wasn't home. And for a year, I was often, you know, at night when you're exhausted and you're trying to go to bed and you're thinking, okay, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
Like, whew, got through another day. How am I going to do this? Mm-hmm. I would lay in bed and just repeat, I am safe. I am safe. I am safe. because no matter what was going on, I was safe. I had a roof over my head, right?
Yeah.
My children were safe in their beds and I was safe. And I would just repeat that mantra until I fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I started training in meditation, I was like, oh, I guess
that's what you were doing.
I was doing that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, a way to, people I think often misunderstand meditation and think that it's supposed to clear your mind and you're just supposed to be quiet.
Yeah.
That's really not the goal of meditation at all. The idea is to let the snow globe settle. Right. I think we're all familiar with the snow globe, right? And as you go throughout your day, meeting your tasks, getting your job done, driving your children around, managing a home, so on and so forth,
yeah,
you can get really wound up. There's a lot of different thoughts. Oh, and then you get that text from, you know, your sister-in-law, or you get the, you know, the call from your mother and you're worried about, you know, there's a lot.
Yeah.
So through meditation, the idea is really to just let it all settle.
Mm-hmm.
Let the snow globe settle and let's see what's there. You know, just observe it. Again, it doesn't mean you need to do something about the text message, the phone call, the bake sale that's coming up.
Right.
You don't need to do anything about it. Just notice it. Because just that simple act of noticing it is enough to start the diffusion of anxiety around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think many of us just don't take that time, you know, to be in ourselves and to let that. I love that image of letting the snow globe settle, because sometimes that's what it feels like, right? There's so much going on in your own head. You can't turn off your thoughts. You have so many responsibilities, and taking the time to let it settle and just maybe remind yourself that, you know, I'm safe or I'm here or, you know, I think that's important. I know I don't take enough time to do those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times have you, maybe yourself, or you've heard people say, oh, I got this great idea in the shower.
Oh yeah.
Right.
All the time.
Or when I was driving.
Yeah.
Well, why is that? It's because your brain and your body, in the case of showering, of course, you're physically busy doing something else.
Yeah.
Right. So you've let go of all the other stuff. And you're just focusing on shampooing your hair and, you know, lathering up the washcloth or whatever the case may be.
Yeah,
And that's when ideas can come.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Solutions to problems can come.
Right.
And for me, meditation is definitely when I don't make the time for it now.
Yeah.
That's when I notice it. Right.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about, like, you know, caffeine.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
When you don't get your caffeine.
Yeah.
Right. That's when you start to feel it.
Oh, and yeah.
So in the opposite way, because it's more calming, when I don't take the time, I find myself not thinking as clearly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not making the better decisions with either my exercise or my eating or my words, quite frankly. I don't find that I'm at my best.
Gotcha.
I'm doing it.
Gotcha. So it's become a part of your daily practice?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people say, too, that have a practice of exercise, that if they miss their exercise, they don't feel the same, right? So it's kind of, you know, you're exercising, or maybe not exercising, but you're practicing mindfulness. And of course, if you're not doing it, you're going to notice a change.
Right, right. And I'm glad you brought up exercise, too, because there is such a mind-body connection. I think we all know it's there. I don't know that people ever really examine it. You know, if you've sat at a desk all day or you've been in a car for a long period of time and you're like, oh, I'm feeling a little agitated, feeling a little crabby. Well, what did you do all day, right? But if you went out on a bike ride, especially if you went on a bike ride with your children, right? You're out in nature, your body's moving. So This past January, I decided to devote my year. I'm continuing my meditation practice, but I'm also learning Qigong. It's spelled Qigong. And what I've learned so far, again, it's interesting. So Qigong is the study of the flow of energy through your body and how that energy relates to your moods and your feelings. So young children and animals do this really naturally, right? You ever see a dog get up after taking a nap and he does that whole shakes the body from the nose to the tail?
Yeah.
or you'll see little children who might, some people call it the zoomies, right? They just need to run around the house because they've got some energy that's feeling caught up.
Right.
And again, as I'm learning these moves, it's really funny. You know, there's this one move where you take your hands over your head and as if you're throwing a ball down to the ground, you just blow out. So it's up on your toes and then you're blowing out. And I used to do this all, not frequently. And apparently this is a move that helps you clear energy that's stuck here in your heart center.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, oh my God, I did that. I didn't know there was a name for it.
Yeah.
So for me, the Qigong is, for me, it's becoming this perfect combination of meditation, exercise, and mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's really those three all wrapped up together. And it's a little bit different than Tai Chi. I think more people are more familiar with that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm hoping that we as Americans will learn more about these Eastern ways.
Yeah.
Because there is something to be said for it. I was traveling this past weekend. I had to drive up to Maine and I'd been in the car for 7 hours and I didn't feel like practicing, Dave. I'm just tired. I just want to unpack and I just want to grab dinner and go to bed.
Yeah.
But I threw on my 20-minute Qigong class and I will tell you that I felt like a new person.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So how do you explain that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't take a pill. I didn't have a cocktail. I didn't, yeah. I did this breathing and moving meditation and it just cleared my energy and just changed my whole mood.
Yeah.
So I know there is science behind it.
And I'm sure.
That's what I'm starting to learn.
Yeah.
But, and it was, you know, I mean, granted I'm paying for the class, but it was a really free, easy fix.
Right.
That was good for me. So how can you not want to do it?
Yeah. I think a lot of people talk about how when you are feeling down or you're in the depths of a depression, you know, the best thing you can do for yourself is to get moving. So that mind-body connection, obviously there's a lot of science behind it. It works. If you go out and exercise, you're going to notice yourself feeling better. Mm-hmm. You can't not feel better when you're doing that type of thing. You know, Jason and I have a background in acting, and so we went through a lot of training that was all about connecting your body, your mind, your energy. You know, it's in order to be present, in order to really perform. So a lot of the actors' exercises are things that we benefited from, you know, and it's as you're talking about things like it, you know, the act of listening, even the deep listening, you know, that's what you try to do as an actor. You know, you have to play truth and you have to be in the moment and all of those things. If you haven't had that background in the arts or through fitness, then you might not have that skill set. You might not even know where to go for that skill set. So if you are, you know, right now I own a health insurance agency. I'm on the road or behind a desk for most of my life, you know, and except when I'm out with my family and on the ball field or in the ice rink. So I have to remind myself of all the things I've learned in my previous lives to balance all of that out. Right. And so for somebody who goes right from school into a job in finance or into a job that puts them behind a desk, you know, they don't even know sometimes that these things would help them.
Right. Right. And it's, you have to experience it.
Yeah.
Right.
You do.
And you have to try it. It doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a 40-mile bike ride.
Right.
Go for a mile.
Yeah.
Take
Start
a walk.
Small.
Go for 5 minutes.
Right.
You know, we all know that when we go on vacation, right, let's say we really go on vacation, visualize that, you know, tropical beach with the palm tree and the sand and the sun's on you. And, you know, everybody, most people think, as did I, well, of course, how can you not feel good when you're in this beautiful setting? But the truth of it is, Dave, you can have that beautiful feeling sitting right here at your desk at your insurance agency.
Right.
It sounds maybe a little far-fetched, but if you think about your thoughts, if you think about what's happening, one thought can create that, you know? And I've seen people be like, oh no, it's all about what's around you. And it's simply not true. We need to really contemplate living from the inside out instead of the outside in.
I think that's a great point. I think it's important for people because otherwise you're really living for that vacation, that once or twice a year when you get to go away. And, you know, why not incorporate that feeling into your life on a daily basis?
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of my colleagues, Carolyn, ran her coaching practice. She lived in Hawaii for several years. And Hawaii.
Yeah.
I mean, just saying that state's name, right, conjures up, you know, coconuts, sunshine, and palm trees.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of unhappy people there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I, living in Connecticut, I'm scratching my head saying, really?
Right.
But what you forget is that, you know, they have the stresses of life and work and raising children and just because they're on this beautiful island.
Yeah.
So it just goes to prove our point.
Yeah.
Right? If you can live on this beautiful island and still not have such good feelings or sink into a depression, okay, wait a minute. Maybe it's not the setting.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the setting that's here in our head.
Yeah. We can't run away from ourselves.
Right.
We are who we are wherever we go, you know. And I think I've lived in a few different places in my life. I moved to New York out of college and did that for a while. And even that, you know, when you move to, I lived in Brooklyn, I worked in the city. It was so exciting and amazing. And every day was a new adventure until it wasn't, because then it became my everyday life. It wears off.
Yes.
Those things are just temporary. So we have to look within ourselves to see, what's the most important thing? How do we re-enchant every day when it becomes normal?
Right. And that's it. All of our moods and feelings are temporary.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
The highs and the lows, like you said earlier, we go through these phases. And again, I think just recognizing that alone is really powerful.
Yeah.
Because sitting that and knowing that, again, whatever that low feeling is,
mm-hmm.
or even that high feeling, like this is going to pass, so I better stay really, let me just be really present with it
and
acknowledge it.
Yeah. Now, do you have any kind of big goals for your business or your life, like what you're shooting towards, what you'd like to accomplish?
I do. I think as far as coaching individuals, I do prefer, I'm at a point in my life where I want to keep it small in the sense of, so I'm hoping to increase my client base to no more than 10. I have a few now, but want to keep it to under 10. And I'm hoping to offer workshops, again, either parenting from the heart or unlocking life simplicity. Oh, and you know, I'll never be able to give up my navigating the holidays because I get such great
that
feedback.
Sounds like that
from
would
that.
Be important.
I get such great feedback from that. I am hoping to, again, expand it internationally, you know, because of the beauty of Zoom and the internet, you know, it's easy to do that.
So those group courses, you want to expand into that more and more.
Exactly.
I know when you and I first talked on the phone, you had mentioned that a lot of what you do is helping parents communicate with teenagers. So that's a big part, right, of what you're kind of targeting as well?
Absolutely. And it's not just about the communication, Dave. It's more about creating a whole calm household, right?
Mm-hmm.
And working with parents, because I have some coaches that work specifically with teens, and I'm not afraid to work with teens, but I feel like my more sweet spot is working with parents, is really getting quiet and really taking a look at how you can support teenagers and mm-hmm. tweens. And remembering, you know, we've been talking about the science behind this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remind ourselves, which again, I think it's easy as parents, because you see this beautiful being, you know, grow, and maybe they're 12, but they look like they're 18,
right,
or they're 15, they look like they're 26.
Yeah.
And you're looking at this person and you're like, how come they can't, why are they being so rude? Why are they being so disrespectful? Mm-hmm. Well, there's science behind this.
Yeah.
The chemistry in their body is so volatile and ever changing from moment to moment. You know, we all know the science out there. They're now saying that the frontal lobe is not fully developed until people are somewhere between 25 and 28.
Yeah, right.
Okay, we've all heard that.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that really mean? It means that when they're going through that development, that they don't have cognitive function. They don't have the ability to make rational choices. They don't have the ability to see the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
right? So they might say things or make choices that don't seem real positive or you know, in their best interest, but they can't see it. They physiologically can't see it. And I've always joked, you know, there's a reason they don't teach physics in third grade. Can you imagine if they added physics to the third grade curriculum in the school system? I don't think that would go over very well, because the cognitive and the brain function just isn't there yet.
Yeah.
It'll get there. We know that they teach physics in some middle schools and high schools and certainly in college.
Right.
But if the brain's not ready for it, then it won't work. It'll fall on deaf ears. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
So, continuing to work with parents to, again, be present, listen for the feeling, how to not take things so personally. Some of the feedback I've gotten from some of the people in my Parenting from the Heart class too is, wow, I didn't realize that this would help me with my relationship with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first woman, because I've had three women say that to me. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Could you please share?
Yeah.
I said, well, you know, you talked about deep listening, listening for the feeling, not just the words. And, you know, my husband was, you know, really complaining about XYZ. And it was the 100th time he's been complaining about XYZ. So I really just kind of listened and I didn't offer anything. And I just asked him a follow-up question, mm-hmm. like, well, why is this important to you? You seem to really be upset about it. And just opening up that dialogue, she said, just changed everything.
I bet.
And I thought, wow, okay, so that's really powerful.
That's amazing.
That's really powerful.
Yeah. So that is the Parenting from the Heart course that you're going to.
Correct. I'll be offering that in the fall.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, this has been just a fantastic conversation, and I really appreciate you being here and sharing all that you're doing. I think it's amazing. I think it's so important for people too, because we don't have a skill set to get us beyond some of these challenges we face, which everybody faces, you know, you're raising kids. It's not an easy process. It's very rewarding, but it's not always easy. So I think having a resource like you, somebody that is opening people's eyes to these things, is really amazing. So appreciate you sharing that with us today.
Great. Dave, thanks for having me. And please, I want your listeners to know they can reach out to me on my website, leandangelo.com. And our first conversation is just that. It's a conversation, because I always want to make sure that I'm a good fit with someone. You know, there's no fee for that whatsoever. I'm really open to having the dialogue.
Amazing. Well, I do encourage everybody to reach out, to go to your website, to take a look at these courses. I'll definitely be looking at them myself. So, Leanne, thank you so much for being here today and being on Sounds of Health. And hopefully we'll have you again.
Great. Thank you for having me.
All right. You have a great day.
You too.
Sounds of Health is brought to you by Nutmeg Insurance Advisors and recorded at the offices of Nutmeg Advisory Group. The podcast is produced by Jason Carubia and Dave McNiven, with music by Rob Hames. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, X, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Your support means a lot to us, and we appreciate it when you like, subscribe, and leave a review. If you know someone who you think should be a guest on the show, please email us at soundsofhealthpodcast@gmail.com. Each week, we spotlight the stories, people, and resources that inspire and motivate others to improve their health, and we are just getting started. Help us to share these sounds, and don't keep us a secret.